Good morning. Glad to see you all here today. All right. I want you to imagine for a moment that you're hungry and you're going to a restaurant. And as you get out of your car, you're going towards the restaurant, and then another large party gets out of their car at the same time and starts moving towards the restaurant. I've been in this situation, and I've actually quickened my pace, not enough to be noticed. But, you know, there was, I can think of at least once where I've gone to the door, and normally when I would hold the door open, I just went in because I want to make sure I get my name on the list because, you know, some of these restaurants get real busy. So that's happened. I've also been on airplanes, and after landing, after a long flight, I'm getting ready to switch it up. All right, I'm going to keep going with this. You land, and then it's finally, you know, as soon as the lights go on, everybody wants to stand up in the aisle, right? And I've been in a situation where I'm reaching up to get my bags. Finally, I'm about to head down the aisle, and then somebody behind me pushes past because they got to get off the airplane right now. And I'm thinking, you couldn't wait 10 more seconds. Like, honestly, like, you got to push past. Or another scenario I've been in my life, trying to get gas at Sam's Club or Costco. I mean, if I ever see this many vehicles, I just go to another city probably because I just can't handle waiting. The lines are so long. Imagine being in line and all of a sudden you realize there's actually a shorter line, even though you've been waiting there, but somebody who just arrived gets up and they sneak in there, or they're starting to move in. What should I do? Should I veer ahead and just pop the nose of my vehicle in that direction? And just pretend like I couldn't see them. So, I don't know if you've been in any of these kinds of scenarios. You know, what's the common theme in these different kinds of scenarios that we find ourselves? Well, sometimes it's my goals getting blocked, perhaps some frustration, feels like maybe there's a winner and a loser. The real big theme that runs through these scenarios, and honestly, many scenarios every day, is that we feel our goals and interests are more important than others. That whatever I'm doing, it's essential. I have every right and reason why me going first or me getting the thing I want is more important than the other person. I should be first in the restaurant because we parked first. So the law of the universe is if you park first, you should go in. That's the deserving way. Or people on the back of the airplane, I don't know how much you paid for your ticket, but you're going to have to wait, okay? Because there's people ahead of you. It's time for me to exit. Or I've been waiting in this Costco line for so long, I deserve to get gas for. This is kind of how we work. This is what goes. We don't ever maybe think those thoughts in a way where we're perceiving, but that's how we feel. And that happens to us constantly. This really reveals any of these scenarios. It really reveals how much we live with a me above you approach in life. We just often live with a me above you approach to relationships and situations. And those moments are really the grinding points that crop up in relationships and really make life difficult. In fact, if you're in a relationship where a person has this approach, and you're just feeling like they're constantly, you know, going first, putting themselves first, thinking about themselves, it can be very, very difficult. And if you are doing that in a relationship, it's probably a difficult relationship for people to be around you. My name is Bruce, by the way. I'm the lead pastor of Valley Lights, and I'm really excited that you're here today because we're starting a new series of messages looking at what we call the heart attitudes. These are our core values as a church. If you're newer to Valley Lights and you're interested about what we're all about, what do we focus on, what do we prioritize and elevate, scripturally, it's going to be this. And so this is a great series for you to get to know who we are and what we're like as a culture. But really what we're doing with these heart attitudes, we're exploring God's relational guidelines that help us deal effectively with those grinding points. Relationships can be very difficult and frustrating. You know, some of your greatest joys and some of your greatest frustrations can be in relationships. How do we take God's approach that doesn't result in constant friction, but rather relationships become strong and cohesive and delightful and enjoyable for many, many years? So for that to happen, really what we got to do, really the starting point for relationships to become a delight over years, we have got to deal with this me above you approach that for some reason comes so naturally to all of us. And I think there's reasons that we feel like we deserve our goals, that we feel that we deserve to get what we want. One of the things that comes up in Philippians 2, 3, and 4, we're going to look at this verse a few times in this message, but Paul's writing this letter to the church in Philippi, and he says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit." Selfish ambition, really what that, if you were just to put that in common vernacular, you'd say, I want what I want, when I want it, and I'll hurt you to get it if I need to. Which I can hurt you, you know, by being rough or rude or pushy. There's this selfish ambition. And then the vain conceit is where we have an excessive pride, where we really think highly of ourselves with no real basis. Like, honestly, what reason in all the universe should I be the one to go first? We just have this vain pride that goes beyond healthy self-respect. I'm not talking about, you know, good self-esteem. This is overboard thinking that we are entitled. We deserve to be first. And so I had a interaction like this with my kids. We were coming to church today, and my younger daughter asked if she could go in the front seat. And I was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And then one of my older kids was like, I was like, what? She's like, she's going in the front seat? I was like, yeah. He's like, and I was like, I was watching the gear slowly turn. I'm like, what are you thinking? He's like, I'm thinking I deserve to go in the front seat. We've had this conversation many times before. I'm like, I know, it's so amazing. He's like, yeah. He's like, I was thinking that I'm older, so I should go in the front seat. I'm like, how early does this entitlement start in a human being? It's before 5 years old, I think, because it just runs in all of us. And so, but I actually appreciate is my son who could identify what was going on inside. He's like, that word deserve, because we talk about that, he was able to identify what was going on in him. And so he didn't have this, we didn't have a big meltdown on the way to church. It was amazing. But you know, we have these reasons, and we're adults, so we're more sophisticated. We're not clamoring for the front seat. Or maybe you do actually sometimes, I don't know. But we, you know, there's some reasons why I do deserve. This is what we think. First of all, I'm smarter than you maybe. Or maybe if you're a person, you have more money. Well, certainly, obviously, if I have more money, that puts me at a higher position than you, obviously. How would I get more money if I'm not better than you? Maybe I know more important people than you. I've achieved certain awards and honors and victories in my life, degrees, different things. I deserve recognition because of these great things in my life. I deserve to have what I want, and honestly, other people should let me have these things. Or maybe another reason that we feel so entitled is because we've been deprived in life. Man, I've had a harder life than you. Don't know what I've been through. My struggles have been greater than your struggles. In fact, what I'm going through right now is worse. I have worse pain and loss in my life, and that's why I should get what I want. Because life has been so exceptionally hard for me, I deserve to have other people let me have what I should have. So we can go in all these different directions that just feeds this entitlement and this deserving, this me above you approach, and God sees things really differently. In Romans 2:11, he says, "For God does not show favoritism." He doesn't play favorites. Actually, God would say, none of you are more deserving than any other of you. Each person is very important to God, certainly. He's created all of us, but he does not see any of us as more important as any other of us. So that's why Paul writes in this verse in Philippians, he says, whatever you do in your life relationally, or anything else, do nothing. By the way, there's no wiggle room on this one. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. This fundamental shift in the way that we handle our inclination towards pride and selfishness is where we start coming on this concept of heart attitude number one. This is our first core value as a church, is put the goals and interests of others above my own. It's written down on your handout as well if you want to see that phrase. But let's look at the rest of what Paul says in this verse here. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. It makes you like squirm a little bit when you just think about that in reality. Like, oh, they're better. But I know they're not better than me though. Like, how do I do this if they're really lower than me though? Like, see them as better than myself. Just do this for a second. Think about somebody that you struggle with looking at with contempt, or somebody who really pushes your buttons, or somebody that just grinds your gears, and you think, That person. Think about that person, and Paul's saying, consider them better than yourself. That's just like, how do you get through this? He says, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. So he's saying, like, all right, you need to take care of yourself in your life. Make sure you're providing for yourself and you're doing well in life according to God's standards. Do that, but don't just look at yourself, okay? He said, also look to the interests of others. This means we have to intentionally stop focusing on all the reasons why I should be first, or why in this disagreement I have with this person, my perspective should win out. We have to stop thinking that way. We should stop thinking, I need my goals to be considered. Consider me. I need a little consideration here. I deserve to have things go my way. We have to stop all that. We have to intentionally choose to view others as more deserving than we are. They deserve to have their interests considered by us according to what God is saying here. So, and this might sound preposterous, perhaps impossible, maybe totally unrealistic. You're thinking, how could I possibly do this in all of my relationships? Because you know, as well as I do, we cannot avoid a clash of goals. It would be one thing if we had people that were difficult to relate with. You know, go ahead to that next slide. We cannot avoid a clash of goals. You know, the difficult people, if they just stayed on their own island and I was over here, it really wouldn't bother me that much. But we have to end up interacting with people a lot. And so as we're interacting in marriage and at home and in work and in the neighborhood, we just have this ongoing clash and things just keep happening. And what I want clashes with what the other people want, and we can't both be first. So I just want to give you a visual illustration of what this looks like. Here's a brief video clip from a TV show we like to watch. We've watched. It's called All Creatures Great and Small. It's set in England, and you're going to see a clip from a bridge where only one vehicle can go across at a time. So check this out. This video is a perfect illustration of the kind of clash that we find ourselves in very often, where there's no way for both of us to get what we want. It's a bridge, literally only one car can go across. Somebody has to back down in humility and go in reverse. It's kind of actually humbling to be the one just going backwards, like going that way. But the grumpy guy, he backed up at first, right? Didn't he go backwards? Was it in humility though? No. You could see on his face and his expression, it was begrudging and resentful. And so here's the thing. If I concede to the other person's goal, but I'm resentful while I'm doing it, that means I still think I'm more important. I may be doing the action, but man, now that I've deferred to you, the next time we have a clash, I'm gonna let you know about this, that I went backwards last time, okay? And so now I have got more ammunition to be even more deserving the next time we have an issue. So we cannot avoid a clash of goals, whether it's for the good of another person or the good of a group or a church like this. There's going to be opportunities to love others practically at really inconvenient times. Really, the opportunities to serve and to express consideration and to put their goals is probably almost always going to be at a time you'd really rather not. And to married couples in the room, the opportunities are infinite. For their endless daily opportunities to put the goals and the interests of your spouse above your own. And, you know, if the lights got left on downstairs, seems like it should be the last person down there that should go down to turn them off. And it wasn't me, by the way. I think that's the way I think. Or, you know, if there's kids that are sick in the other room, I'm pretty sure I did it last time. So maybe it's your turn to get up late. Or choosing furniture for the house. You got strong opinions or any kind of decision or situation where there's just some emotions wrapped up. How do we get to this point where in marriage, I'm willing to back it up in reverse and lower myself and say, I'm going to see you as more important than myself. I'm going to see your goals as above my goals. How do we do that? The infinite opportunities also exist for anybody that has roommates, people that you live with, anybody that you work with. The opportunities are endless, even your neighbors. In fact, Has anybody had any tension with a neighbor of any kind ever in your life? You know, disagreements or noise or messes or all kinds of things. Actually, I had one. We were living in a place where there was two houses on a shared property. The driveway was shared. On their side, it was a concrete patio. On our side, there was grass. And they had a little dog that would poop on our grass. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't like that very much. I would prefer that to not happen. You know, we got little kids, and you know, they tried to take care of it. And you know, my wife was just so much more willing. She's like, it's not a big deal. We can clean it up. I was like, it seems like a big deal to me because I feel pretty strongly that there should not be poop. We don't even have a dog, so why am oh, no? There's no reason I should be cleaning up someone else's dog poop. Everyone would agree with me on this, okay? I'm very well fortified in this position. And then when my kids step in it and I'm over there with the hose, it's in the tread of their shoes. I'm like, oh, I do not like this at all. And so I'm thinking about this verse, and I'm thinking this means I need to intentionally see these neighbors is more deserving than me. That God is expecting me to consider what's good for them above what's good for me. And you know, it doesn't help my situation that I would conveniently overlook the ways that they would need to be considerate of us. And certainly living on the same property, there's probably lots of ways back and forth where there needs to be consideration and goodwill. But I would forget about that. And you know, after some open and honest talks about like trying to come together in this, they really did start making some adjustments, and they did become considerate. But I think the Lord was maybe asking me, like, would it honestly kill you every once in a while to just clean up someone else's dog poop? How hard is that really? And I think God so designed that arrangement years ago just to expose how quickly my pride and my selfishness and my entitlement would just come out. And my focus at that time on myself was blocking me from genuinely enjoying the relationships with people that we really saw every day. And wouldn't it be greater to have enjoyable, sweeter relationships? You know, and then to really drive the knife into my selfishness, look at Mark 10:45. Lord convicted me many times with this. It says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served. He came to serve. And he didn't just clean up dog poop. He gave his life as a ransom for many who spit in his face. So if he's my example, what leg do I have to stand on? How entitled am I really? Over and over and over in your life, there's going to be a clash of goals. And it's going to be a question of who is going to be the one to humble themselves, to lower themselves, to put it in reverse and yield to the other. One thing I want to throw out there as a consideration, you may be thinking, one argument that might come to mind is like, what am I going to do? Just like let people walk all over me? And I would say, no, we're not required to be a complete doormat to people. This hard attitude, number one, put the goals and interests of others above my own. It does not say, let people take advantage of you now. Let people walk all over you. It really is reasonable to hold others accountable to pay their own way in life. For example, 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. Where God does expect people to pay their own way, pay for what their needs are. So don't hear me saying that people can just mooch their way through life and prey on humble Christians just to get through. That's not what this practice is about. Also, God expects people to bear their own responsibilities. In Galatians 6:5, it says, for each one should carry their own load. The load has to do with like a cargo list. Basically, like every soldier has a day pack for everything that I need every day, and every soldier needs to carry their own pack in life. That's the expectation. If people are capable of work, they're not to freeload their way through life, expecting someone else to bear their responsibility. But really, I think the harder thing, though, is for us to really wrestle through these just daily, regular examples of putting other people's goals first. And the question that may come to mind is, all right, if I do that, if I really do put her goals first, if I really put his goals first, I'm going to be the only one. I can't be the only one doing this. Like, what if they don't reciprocate and start putting my goals first sometimes, too? And the truth is, you're not the only one doing it. Even if nobody around you is considering your goals, we know for a fact that Jesus practiced this regardless of who was in the room. For Jesus, he was around a bunch of selfish, arrogant people, and it didn't seem to slow him down one bit. Jesus knew that the sacrifices he needed to make were going to be pleasing to God, and that's what drove him and motivated him. It was about his obedience to the Father. And it didn't matter how much people considered or ignored his goals. The example of Jesus for a Christian obligates us to love others. Look further in Philippians 2, verse 5. Paul says, he just keeps this idea going. He says, in your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus Christ. Like the perspective, your attitude on life. The way when you come up to a relationship or a tense moment or a grinding moment, click into the Jesus mindset. It says, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Meaning this, Jesus had every right to get everything he could have wanted and needed and desired. He had every right for people just to make his life more comfortable if he so desired. And we sometimes think we're better than people. He actually was. Jesus was morally better, spiritually better, intrinsically. His very essence, he was, as it says here, he was God. So if there's anybody that could have been entitled and deserving, it would have been him, but he didn't go that way. That's his mindset. It says, rather, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. I'm going to be a servant. Whatever dirty job is required, whatever release of my goals is needed, I'm going to be a servant. It says he was made in human likeness. He went from God to being, he was put in one of these bodies. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. At every stage of Jesus' life, he took a step lower, and then he took another step lower, and he just kept going down and down and down all the way till death, like the worst kind of death, most painful, humiliating kind of death. He just went, it was a stairs down for Jesus all the way until the Lord exalted him later. So can anyone deny that Jesus truly considered others? Can anyone deny that Jesus truly was interested in the welfare of others above himself? We can't get around his example. 1 John 3:16 says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. So he sets the pattern, and we follow. And really, the reason he set down his life for us, by the way, is the truth is we're not deserving. We're very unworthy. In fact, you will never, ever in your life be worthy of God's love. Even when we get to heaven, you'll never be worthy. The thing that gets us his love is his mercy, and when we put our faith in Jesus Christ, the worthiness of Christ is given to us. But it's nothing that we bring to the table. And so the fact is we are desperately and hopelessly stuck on a path towards eternal separation from God forever called hell. The only way we can get off that track is by putting our faith in Jesus for salvation. Trust no longer in my goodness or how much I pray or how great my track record is, and trust none of that, but trust him for salvation. Then we get to receive God's forgiveness and get to spend eternity with him forever. That's the reason that Jesus came to die for us. So Jesus died for us. Now he says, time for you to die every day. Meaning, you know, we may not actually die physically, but it's like a death of a different kind, where sometimes giving up my goals and preferences, it feels as painful as death at times, where like maybe I have a goal that I hold so strongly, it would kill me to let it go. It's almost like it feels wrong that I shouldn't have to serve in this situation. I shouldn't have to give this up. It's really what it means to die to myself. And, you know, you might see yourself as a generally loving person, but we tend to think too general about love. You know, do you love your family members? Do you love your spouse? Sometimes you might even pray, God, help me love people more. What does that really mean? It means if we're going to actually love the people around us, we're going to spend a lot of time helping them with their goals at a cost to myself. If we're going to love people, it's just going to mean a lot of sacrifice daily. And so as it turns out, real love is not general. It gets very specific. It gets very daily. It comes down to countless practical situations where I have choices of, will I help? Will I yield? Will I sacrifice? Will I just wait on what's good for me? I want to give you a few examples of this in real life in our church. We went a couple weeks ago on a missions trip to the Sacramento area. Here's a photo of our group that went up there. There's 14 people from our church went to go help a new church get started. And we got to be there for the very first baptism. It was really exciting to see God at work and even have memories of what starting a church was like for us 5 years ago. And this group photo, you can see there's a bit of a lake in the background. And we had some prayer time at this elevated spot. And then some people wanted to go check out the lake. This is sort of like we had a little bit of extra free time. So people went down a path that was sort of steep and it was difficult walking. And so a bunch of people went down to the lake. And somebody had said, oh, I'm gonna hang out here up at the top and I prefer not to go down the path. And then one of the guys on the team, John, had said, oh, I'll stay up here too. And I've been on a lot of adventures with John, and I know it's because John didn't stay at the top because he didn't want to go see the lake. It's because he was putting the goals and interests of this other person so they weren't not be by themselves. And really, in that moment, what I think was happening was John was not asking, hey, what's good for me? What's good for him is to go experience what everyone else experienced. John was not thinking, I sacrificed a lot to come on this missions trip. No, he just said, here's an opportunity to serve. But maybe this is just a small thing, but it's a thing. It kept happening. And John and other people on this trip, there were just opportunities where people could just defer what was good for them just to be a blessing to somebody else. This happened a lot as well. Yesterday, we had a wonderful wiffle ball tournament event in the community and had a lot of people that we met and just people we didn't know at all came to this event. And what I kept seeing were team captains that were making the event really fun for other people, considering how do I be a blessing to these strangers I've never met or these little kids that are playing wiffle ball for the first time? There's a lot of opportunities for adults to play a game and get real competitive. And actually, you know, there was some healthy competition going on yesterday. But at the same time, I could see there's this track to like, how do I consider these people on the field? And they really put their heart into that. I saw there was a few people there was a team or two that needed a few more players to get the critical minimum for this team to go. And so I had to ask a few people that really were not planning on playing. I said, hey, can you jump on a team? And it was like, I don't know if I want to play. But we had a few people just jump up, put on, you know, tighten up their sneakers and get out there really for the good of others. It was not their preference, but they went. There was even at one point, one of the guest families that had come, there was a woman that was sitting by herself in the grass watching her son play the sport. And I thought, there's an opportunity to meet her. I was like, it really should just be a woman. She's sitting by herself. A woman should go talk to her. And then within 2 minutes, Jackie was over there, sat down in the grass, and began a spiritual conversation with this woman in a very considerate way. And really, as I was looking around at this event yesterday in the park, there, I feel, was a culture of people from our church considering the goals of others. This is not for me. This is time not for me to figure out how I'm going to have the most fun or what's going to be most pleasing. It was just, there was this culture of serving and putting the goals of others first. And this really is the entire reason that we did the event. It was tons of fun. The event was tons of fun, but really we planned it out of love for people. I really believe when we do events like that, God is going to bring people to connect with us that maybe wouldn't walk through these doors on a Sunday morning right off. And it's so true. There was people that God clearly brought at very pivotal times. There was a handful of significant conversations and even the gospel being shared in one-on-one conversations with God. There was one man who we got to share the gospel with him, and he was really blown away by first the scary awfulness of the bad news, which is that we're all sinners and God's wrath is coming on us. But then he really wanted to know the good news, which is if we put our faith in Christ, we can have eternal salvation forever. And he said, I've been in church for many years, but no one's ever really explained it this clearly for me before. And he didn't even come for our event. He just randomly showed up. He was hoping to get on the field to play with his boys. and do some batting practice. So he wasn't even trying to come to a church event. And his boys ended up playing with our teams. But he said, I really needed to come here to hear this. He's like, I don't know if I'm ready just yet to commit my life to Christ, but I really appreciate you sharing this. So we swapped numbers, and we were praying for him. That really is the entire reason we did this, is out of love for people and out of a desire to help more people connect with God. So there were so many wins, so many ways that we teamed together as a church for a one-day mission experience that really ended up being a lot of fun. And I want to show you a few other examples that you might consider applying this heart attitude, number one. There's a book that we have. It's called The Heart Attitudes, written by Harold Bullock, the founder of our church network. And if you're interested, you could pick this up at some point. But he lists in this chapter on heart attitude number one a few examples where you might apply this. So imagine you're working and you would swap your summer vacation time frame with another coworker because it was good for them. Or imagine you're on the job and you finish your work early, but you help a coworker who's gotten bogged down. Or imagine another driver on the freeway signals to enter your lane, you decelerate to let them in. Or at a party, you let other people go get the refreshments first. Or if you're looking at the pizza and you're doing the math at how many people are left and you're like, there's one more slice, or the dessert math, you let somebody else get the last slice. Or maybe putting other people's goals means when I'm at home and I'm talking with my wife or my kids, maybe it means I just put my phone face down when they want to talk and I just focus on what's good for them. Or maybe heart attitude one is just a decision to listen before speaking when someone is talking. In fact, I'm just gonna focus my attention so hard that I'm gonna really understand you and I'm gonna restrain speaking. Or actually, to be honest, for the more quiet people, sometimes the heart attitude one thing is actually share more. Let yourself be more known. So in this series, we're looking at how to develop enjoyable relationships. This heart attitude of putting the goals and the interests of others above my own, it really has brought joy and delight and motivation to be a part of this team that we call Valley Lights Church. And you know, what comes natural, of course, is we constantly want to put ourselves first, the me above you. That's very normal. You probably already know it causes a lot of friction. It creates frustrating relationships with a lot of grinding points. We had a baby a couple months ago, and about 3 months ago, and when we did, some people from the church set up a meal train, and people brought meals to us. And you know, we've done this a lot. Aaron loves to help in this way for others. But we had some people bring home-cooked meals, which is so fun. We had people ask, what's our favorite takeout? And that makes it fun. Some people drove very far out of their way to bring us a meal. One family made dinner, brought it, and then also brought cinnamon rolls that could be baked fresh the next morning with icing. And it was like, oh, this experience keeps going. I love this. But all of that, those expressions of people serving us, taking time out of their day, you know, if people like to drop off meals, maybe it didn't feel like a big deal to them, but it really meant so much to us. It was such a blessing to be receiving the love and the care. It made me want to practice this even more for other people as well. So this today, what we've looked at, it's the first of seven heart attitudes, our core values, things that we hold as a church. And we'll be looking at the remaining heart attitudes in the weeks to come. These are really important to us. This really does characterize who we are. And I love to see that growing up in as we relate. These are God's relational guidelines summarized from key scriptures in the New Testament, how we relate with one another. We don't do these perfectly. Absolutely, you can tell by some of my examples. I don't do this perfectly. But we keep working on practicing this week after week, year after year, to become more in alignment with what Jesus wants us to do. So if you're new and this has not been the practice of the groups that you've been a part of, or the churches you've been a part of, or the workplaces you've been a part of, I really hope that you get to experience it here in very practical ways. And I hope you get to join us in living it out. So let me just throw a few next steps you might consider today in response to this message. One thing you might do walking away is to identify a person where there's a clash of goals and start practicing this lowering. Just think about bringing that person to mind. Or another step you might take is to identify a way to give up my preferences for the good of the church. How can I just start serving, lowering what's good for me? Or third, maybe you just pray and you ask the Holy Spirit to alert me for these opportunities to lower my goals, because sometimes we don't even see it. Sometimes this me above you approach is so strong, we don't even realize it's happening. So that might be a prayer that God would be glad to answer. So let me end on this final statement from Jesus. John 13:34, he says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." The kind of love that we're talking about, again, is very practical. It's not general and generic. It's very sacrificial. And when the world sees us being willing to sacrifice for the good of others, it stands out. It's just not normal. And what people think, wow, this is totally different. This kind of self-sacrificing approach to life, marriages are so different that operate this way. Parent-child relationships are so different. Church community is so different. This really is one of the distinguishing marks of true Christians, that they love in this way. And so this first heart attitude, it sets up and it impacts all of the heart attitudes that flow after it. But just imagine for a second the health and the quality of your relationships that would flow from practicing just this first heart attitude. Now imagine the good that would be multiplied if the rest of God's relational guidelines were in place. So I hope you'll come back next week and join us as we talk about heart attitude number 2. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, it's inescapable thinking about your love and sacrifice for us when we're looking at Bible verses like this. And it's humbling and it's challenging, but it fills us with gratitude to remember the depth of your love for us. We're so thankful. For those that are considering what it means to follow you as a disciple and to go all in, I pray that you would provide the clarity and then the courage to walk forward in faith. And then would you allow our church body to strongly embody your kingdom, New Testament, biblical values in this way. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.